Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, and we play with needles.
That we do.
And our guest this week, from Michigan, Abigail Timmis. Abby, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. Welcome.
Now, Abigail, we discovered her, Abigail Cecile?
Cecile, yes.
Cecile, AbigailCecile.com. And Abby, you do painted canvas and embroidery. And
I do beautiful
stuff on top of that. So.
Thank you.
Yes. But my first question is, you spent some time at the Royal School of Needlework. So before any more time goes on, we have to hear the story of Royal School of Needlework, how you got there, what you learned, what it was like. I'm just intensely curious about that. I mean, that's kind of the pinnacle of needlework education, I believe. So
I think so. It's always been fascinating to me.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, really, it starts, I think, when I was in high school. You know, I grew up on a hobby farm and just had really my parents kind of indulged in creativity, and they saw my affinity for it. And just through tools and books and teachers and, you know, anything that sparked my interest, any, you know, kind of fiber arts or arts in general, they would, you know, throw resources at me. And so I learned weaving and wool felting, fiber dyeing, photography, screen printing.
That's really great that you would have that kind of support from your parents. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am extremely blessed to have them. And yeah, just to have them, you know, see that that was what I loved and what I was good at, and to, yeah, support me wholeheartedly. So I grew up kind of surrounded by the fiber arts, and by the arts. And, by the time I graduated high school, I thought, well, I really just want to make beautiful things for the rest of my life. I don't know how I'll, you know, turn that into a business or make money doing that, but I know that's what I want to do. I happened to have an old library book from a library sale, and it was written by Erica Wilson. And I read in the introduction that she attended the school, the Royal School of Needlework. And that fascinated me. You know, a school dedicated to hand embroidery was magical to me. And it is magical. You know, I thought, oh, that's so interesting. I think I just Googled it. And I found out that not only was it, you know, actually alive and they were still teaching, but it was pretty renowned. And they were getting a lot of press at the time because they had sewn the lace for Kate Middleton's wedding dress. And she was getting married at that time. So they were in the press, and the whole thing just sort of enchanted me. And so my parents said, well, that looks wonderful. Why don't you go? And I said, okay, sounds great.
You just made a whole lot of people really jealous.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, so a couple of months later, I flew to England and enrolled.
Wow.
What was the application process like?
So they have a few different degrees. The one that I was looking at, really their only requirement is that you're passionate about it. So, you know, they knew I was a high school graduate, but really most of the women in that program, which was the certificate and diploma program, were not college age. You know, you're learning technical hand embroidery, and you just have to love it and have to be willing to, you know, work hard at it. And that was it. That was the requirement.
Okay. So, all right. So what's it like? So you show up the first day. I mean, what's the experience like?
So you show up the first day and you walk down this gravel path to Hampton Court Palace, which was one of Henry VIII's pleasure palaces, actually. And it's red brick from the front. And,
Christine, where is your pleasure palace? Your summer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. With an embroidery school in it.
Right.
To boot. But yeah, you just walk down these halls that are just so old, and it's an incredible experience. It's an incredible place for an embroidery school that is trying to keep the art of hand embroidery alive. You walk up, you know, go up this winding staircase to the RSN for short, to their rooms, and they overlook the palace gardens, which are just stunning. And a wonderful place to kind of explore at lunchtime. And the RSN has this wonderful atmosphere of, you know, focus. You can sit all day and stitch. And, you know, today I have to listen to a podcast or an audiobook or something. But there, it's enough to just be with all these other women stitching. And a tutor will walk around the room and help you with your project wherever you're at. Everybody's at different you know, levels in the diploma or the certificate, so they're working on different projects, and it's wonderful to see what everyone's doing. It's very inspiring. And you know, you'll take a break, you'll sip tea and get to talk a bit then, and then you'll go back to stitching, and that's kind of what a day looks like.
So
and how long was the program?
The program, so I was there for 3 months. I did one technique every month. But you can, you know, the certificate is your first. It's four techniques. So I actually never finished, you know, before I went home again. But once you get the first four techniques, then you move on to the diploma, which I think is maybe six techniques. So you can space it out over 5 years. It's very much a sort of a self-paced kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. You just come in for instruction, you know, maybe once a week, typically. I was there every day. I was a bit of an exception. I was from the U.S., so I had to make the most of being there.
Right, right. So so you still have work to do on that, or did you complete?
It's too late. It's been 5 years, and so I am certified in three techniques, but I do not have my certificate. My last technique was gold work, which I would still love to learn eventually, but at the moment don't have a whole lot of time.
Oh, okay. So then you went to school for the whatever time you were there, and then you could go mm-hmm. home and continue the work and mm-hmm. complete had if you had time then.
I would have had to go back, which is really why I didn't end up doing it, is because it was, yeah, it's quite a, or do one of, they do intensive, sort of 2 week classes during the summertime. Before they were just in, I think, San Francisco. Now they've gone to Williamsburg, Virginia, and, Toronto, I think is the other place. So yes, if you are in the U.S. and you can't get to England, then there is a way to do it now.
There you go, Christine. Virginia, not that far down the road.
Yeah, it's not that bad.
It is not.
Yep, there you go. Sign up.
The wheels are turning.
Yeah.
So, Abby, this I got to believe that no matter what work you did there, this put you on a different level in terms of your stitching and understanding of needlework.
Yeah, I mean, they teach embroidery or needlework as, you know, to preserve it. So it's historic, the way they're teaching it to you. And that to a very, I think, highly sort of skilled degree that we don't necessarily, like hobbyists don't necessarily try to attain, or at least not people in the crafting industry. So it was really amazing to go and to learn it at that level. But I did come away, you know, with all this embroidery skill, but not with a lot of fine art skill. And so that was kind of the next step in my artistic journey, so to speak, was to get more of the artistic side of it.
Okay. So, yeah, and that's where I'm interested, because you went to school to get an art degree then. Is that
yes,
was that before or after the Royal School?
that was after. So I flew home after 3 months, and while I was there, we designed our own projects, you know, while I was at the Royal School of Needlework, and then stitched them. And I really came to realize that I didn't have the artistic skill to design the embroideries that I wanted to stitch. So once I got home, I found an illustration program that was online, and enrolled there and started, you know, just getting sort of this fine art foundation that I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I continued that. Yep. Sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I continued that for the next probably like 4 years, kind of off and on, as, you know, at the same time developing a few embroidery patterns, but.
So yeah. Now looking back at the work that you did at the Royal School and mm-hmm. compared to what you did now, how mm-hmm. would you say it's different aside from just, you know, a higher level of skill? Do you find that different things appeal to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a bit of a transition going from, you know, like canvas. One of the techniques I learned at the Royal School of Needlework was canvas work. And that needlepoint is kind of under canvas work, but needlepoint in the U.S. is actually quite different, I think, from canvas work in England. And so there has been a bit of a transition coming, you know, coming back and getting into the needlepoint world. In terms of like my embroidery patterns, I do use the skills I have there for sure. They've just kind of become ingrained, I think. But I also realize that I think a lot of people need something that's a little bit, not necessarily easier, but people want to be challenged. But I think when you buy an embroidery kit, you know, maybe you have a busy life. It's something that you do to relax. So you're not necessarily trying to, you know, become the best great, you know, needleworker. So there's definitely a balance of, you know, challenging people, but also making sure that it's something they can just enjoy as a hobby, for sure.
Right, because if it's so difficult that it becomes frustrating because you can never get it right, then
yes.
It's no longer fun.
Yes, yes, exactly. And I'm trying to find that balance.
So you take this illustration class, and then what comes first, embroidery work or needlepoint? Because you paint canvases, and then you also have some embroidery designs. How does that all materialize in your march forward?
Well, I think I wanted to design embroidery patterns to a certain extent even before the RSN. In fact, I was worried that I would go and end up designing embroidery patterns for the rest of my life. I thought, what if I don't love it? And my parents said, don't worry about it. And of course they were right. And I did love it. So, you know, that was always kind of brewing in my mind and developing even as I, you know, took illustration classes, took drawing classes and stuff like that. So, you know, I kind of just got to a point in my illustration degree where, well, I actually never finished that either. I took a class and I thought, I miss handwork and this information isn't, you know, revolutionizing my world. Like I've kind of already learned this and I thought, okay, mm-hmm. I think I'm done. Like I'm ready to just jump in wholeheartedly and try to make this work. And so that was when I sort of threw everything at embroidery patterns. And a few months after that, I painted my first needlepoint canvas. It was something I just wanted to try ever since getting back from the RSN. I did not know what I was doing, but I just went for it, and I was pretty pleased with the results. And then a week after I painted my first canvas, I met my next-door neighbor at a block party, Valerie, and she turned out to be a national needlepoint teacher. She went to the RSN as well and owned a needlepoint store at one time. And I thought that was absolutely incredible. And I asked if I could show her my canvas. And she said yes, of course, and told me what I did wrong and corrected my mistakes and then mentored me through building my first collection. And that's how the needlepoint sort of opened up to me.
That's really great that you tripped over somebody like that. Wow.
Yes, it's amazing.
So you really have, in your needlepoint canvases, you really have a kind of a, I guess, a distinct design style to them. It's really, really unique. I'm not sure I've seen that look elsewhere with yours, the way you work flowers in. And I'm looking right now at the one with the English garden number one with the squirrel in it.
And, yes.
Yeah. So how do you approach that? What is it that interests you about these designs? What inspires you when it comes to these things?
You know, I mean, having gone to the Royal School of Needlework, I am very inspired by historic needlework. You know, it's created hundreds of years ago and is still so beautiful. And even designs like William Morris designs, you know, these designs that have lasted for so long, I think they're just stunning. And so I'm very inspired by that. I'm very inspired by folk art and American folk art as well. You'll kind of see that pop up in my designs a bit. So there's kind of that, you know, very rooted in history side that inspires me. But I'm also 25. And so I'm very aware of, you know, trends and themes in color and design and just kind of what I'm, you know, being a 25-year-old, I'm attracted to. Like, what colors do I love?
What's appealing,
yes. And so it's kind of a mix of, I think, the modern and the historic. And I hope that, you know, by doing that, it appeals to millennials, people my age, and modern women and people who like that, you know, aesthetic. And also that my designs have a longevity. And, you know, needlework is such a slow craft that you don't want to, like, you know, stitch something up and 5 years later it be sort of out of style, so to speak.
Right,
so,
obsolete.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do I see, and I never get the word right, Jacobean or Jacobean?
Yes.
In what you're doing? Is that, I'm seeing that then. Okay.
Absolutely. My first technique that I learned at the Royal School was Jacobean crew work. And ever since then, it's been a huge influence.
All right. The
highly stylized flowers and patterns, and I love that.
And what era was that from, just generally?
So that, history. That was, the Jacobean era, I think it's called. I think that it originally came from Persia. Maybe they had tradespeople from England that were going into, you know, that part of the world and bringing textiles and furniture back, and that influenced that time, the design of that time. So I couldn't give you an exact year, but I know there was a revival, you know, in the sort of Victorian times, and so we also tend to think of it as Victorian, but it is older than that.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun design. I always And it always appeals to me, especially the flower style. It's always very nice. So when it comes to painting these canvases, what's your process there? I mean, you draw something out on paper and then copy it, or you do it on the fly on a canvas? How do you go about that?
No, I definitely draw it out first. Typically, I'll have some sort of idea in the back of my brain that I want to work on, and I'll quickly do sort of a very rough sketch just so I can get an idea of the composition, and then I will sketch out all the elements, typically keeping them separate, and then I'll scan them into Adobe Illustrator and trace them and rearrange them, resize them until I really like the design, and then I'll print it out and work with color. So I work with craft acrylics, and I have a chip for each color. And I'll just play with those until I get a color scheme that I like. Usually I'll work with some type of inspiration, like an illustration or piece of stationery, piece of art, even a piece of fabric or something like that. I'll just play with the color. I'll do a small color study. If I'm happy with it, then I will, work on the canvas itself.
Yeah, I saw in one of the pictures you sent to us, it looked like you had an illustration there on the side with all kinds of notes around it.
Yes, that's my color study. Yeah, okay. And then I'll make sure I write down what colors I'm using and how I'm blending them. And yeah, so if I need to do it again, I can.
And how do you translate the paint then into threads? So are you making suggestions on threads, or is that really up to the stitcher?
Yeah, needlepoint's interesting in that the designer doesn't actually have to be a stitcher.
Right.
I do stitch them myself, but a lot of, I think, designers don't. They even take, like, famous artists and put, their designs onto canvas. So I just paint the canvas, and then typically, either a shop owner will, suggest the stitches and the threads, or, the stitcher themselves will choose. It's also sometimes people will write stitch guides for canvases. So an experienced stitcher will come along, pull all the threads, choose the stitches themselves, write it all out, and you can have sort of a guidebook to go with the canvas. But I do not, I do try to keep in mind, since I do stitch my own canvases, I hope that makes me a conscientious painter. the final design is to be stitched on top of, that's its purpose. So I definitely hope to design in such a way that that's obvious.
And you, when it comes to your designs, you mentioned about trying to be attractive in your designs to younger people, and mm-hmm. and when you're 25 years old in a hobby that is filled with the people who are quite a bit older than you, mm-hmm. Do you make a concerted effort to try to attract and expose younger people your age and maybe even younger to the hobby? Is that part of what your mission in life, if I can say that?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes and no. Not when I'm designing, because I think that what I love, hopefully other people my age will love as well. And I think that's, I just try to make a beautiful design primarily. But in terms of, the way I market, or, I definitely have ideas of how we could, reach people my age. It's something that I do hope to do. It is a little bit of a mission. I think that part of it is when I was in England, I saw they have such a respect for the handcrafts, I think more than we do for sure in the U.S. And so you actually had quite a few college students at the Royal School of Needlework. They weren't in the same program as I was, but I did see them. And you have, I think, a lot more young people engaged in handworks, engaged in crafts, and they have programs that support that. And so I would love to see that happen in the U.S., and I think it is happening in terms of, like, embroidery is kind of having a big revolution. It's in all the magazines. It just hasn't really made its way to needlepoint yet. And that's definitely something I hope for.
Well, yeah, we had Tess and Thorne on here a couple, 3 weeks ago. They're young. Part of their effort is to appeal to the younger people, and we have two mm-hmm. sisters coming up here in a couple of weeks doing the same thing. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just really encouraging to see young people getting involved in the hobby, not just as stitchers, but as designers and developers of the art. And it's mm-hmm. it's just really encouraging, because the high potential for this handwork, needlework to just simply die off. And so it's really encouraging to see that, and see that people your age, who in our electronic world could easily find other things to occupy your time, that you migrate yourself and find yourself doing needlework, like you said, a slow hobby. A time consuming, takes attention, all those things. And we just don't have a society these days that's oriented that way. So it's, I mean, for me at least, it's really encouraging to see that there's interest and interest in spreading the hobby to your peers. I think that's great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I even wonder if it's a little bit of a swing back. You know, we are.
I was just thinking that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's such, we're so, you know, we're constantly consuming information, and so much of it is on the internet and on social media. And I do think it's kind of a way to do something slowly to kind of balance that out a little bit. And I think we value, you know, at, not that long ago, we had to do this, you know, out of necessity. We had to sew our own clothes and stuff like that. So you can see where at one time, it would be easy to be like, oh, we don't have to do that anymore. That's wonderful. We can get it fast. We can get it cheaply made. But I think that generation has kind of passed, and now we are swinging back and seeing the value of sort of, yeah, a slow craft and something that takes skill and something that takes time and effort. And I think that's wonderful.
Your mother stitch?
She does not, but she is very artistic.
Okay.
She does more stuff. She does fiber art, more like wool felting, fiber dyeing, stuff like that. My grandma was a very accomplished seamstress, although I didn't really learn how to sew too well. But
that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody has their aptitude, and I think it's a little bit more just about what is fun for you to do.
Yes. Yes, I do like to quilt, although I've been trying to get away from hobbies that involve more stitching because I do that for my job now. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's always a tough thing. If you're doing that for your job, as much as you love it, at some point in the day, you need a break from it.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
So, but so I feel what's the hobby that gives you the break?
I like
and
to
don't,
cook.
And don't say video games. Don't even.
I do not like video games. I love to cook. I love to cook Mediterranean food, especially. I think it's kind of creative, but in a very different way. And I like to read. I like to camp, actually, go camping and go to folk music festivals, bluegrass festivals, and stuff like that with my family. So that's what I do to have fun.
Oh, bluegrass. There's a lot of bluegrass in your area.
There is, yes.
Oh, that was, you know, that was one, when, and okay, got to tell a college story. So when I was going to school in Ferris, in Big Rapids, just north of you, about an hour, there was the usual college bars, but some of my friends and I, we found on the northeast side of town, I'm sure it's long gone, an old bar with an outside area. You know, it's one of those eat peanuts and throw them on the floor, but their whole thing was bluegrass. And we would just go there rather than the usual college bars and just sit and listen to bluegrass and drink beer and eat peanuts all night. And, oh, yeah, a lot of bluegrass in your area.
Sounds good to me.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it's fun.
Yep. Oh, I'm envious. I miss that.
Yeah.
You know, those were just nice, especially went to summer school a couple summers and just going there and sitting outside and listening to bluegrass music. What a treat. Yep. Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay, so I want to talk about the embroidery because you paint needlepoint canvases, but then you also do embroidery. Do you do more mm-hmm. embroidery stitching than you do needlepoint? You okay?
Yep, we're good.
Okay. How does that fit in?
I would say in terms of like stitching, it's probably 50-50. It just depends on what project I'm working on at the same time or at the time. You know, I probably have like four different projects going on right now and only one of them's embroidery. You know, I'll just whenever I'm developing a new pattern, that's what I'll be working on. And I typically be stitching at least one of my canvases also. So yeah, I paint canvases and that's sort of one part of my job. And then I designed the embroidery patterns and I saw them online, and that's kind of another part of Abigail Cecile. So yeah, does that answer the question?
Yeah. I'm just curious. And then say you have a design, how do you determine mm-hmm. whether it becomes a needlepoint canvas or an embroidery design?
Is there...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, the thing I really love about designing needlepoint canvases is I love to design, and embroidery is so slow. And so once you design, then you got to work it. And it takes a really long time until you get back to the designing stage. So with needlepoint, I'm just constantly designing. I kick out way more designs for needlepoint than I do for embroidery. Sometimes there'll be a little bit of overlap. Like I'll think, oh, this would make a really good embroidery as well as a needlepoint. But typically, I don't know how those stay separate. I just have different ideas for each one. You could definitely make a needlepoint out of an embroidery design. But I think thinking about what do people want to embroider and what am I not seeing, on the market, and what would I want to stitch myself? Things like that are going to inform my embroidery. And in some ways, because it's quite a time consuming process, that's a little bit, once I do a design for embroidery, I'm kind of sticking with it. With canvas, it's a much faster turnover. So, which I really love, but I can kind of go through ideas faster, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Do you think it has also to do with what the end game would be for the piece, like what it would be used for?
Yeah. I mean, the embroidery designs I do, I typically see them as being kind of wall art or on a pillow or something like that, as where the needlepoint can be an ornament, or it can also be, I do a lot of pillows, things that I think would make good pillows, or wall art as well. I think with the embroidery, I don't think too much about the furnished product, unless I would be like designing something that you would put along the edge of like a skirt or something like that. But mm-hmm. I think hoop art is really popular right now. So I think that's what a lot of people are doing with their embroidery these days.
Do you have friends that stitch? Do you hang out with friends and stitch?
My best friend, I am going to teach her how to needlepoint. She wants to learn. So
all right.
I'm excited about that. And then my next door neighbor who got me into needlepoint, we stitch every week, which is just absolutely wonderful. There's something like stitching with people, that sort of camaraderie is really, really fun. Makes embroidery more exciting. That's about it right now, I think.
So talk about your workspace. What's your workspace like? Is it the standard computer desk and paints and drawing, or what kind of an environment do you operate in?
Well, I am in a room in my house, and it's pretty bright. It's got skylights, which is really great for embroidery.
There's
a light.
Plus. Oh, there's a huge plus.
Yes.
There.
Yeah, it's huge. I do have a desk area with my computer on it for all the admin and even some of the design work and stuff like that. And then I have a sort of little alcove that holds my painting desk and all my paints and my books and sort of design, my sketching pencils and stuff like that. And that overlooks kind of this wetland area by my house with a pond, and it has a bunch of wildlife. So it's a really lovely place to paint. I have a few trestles and frames for my embroidery that I'll just kind of move around the room depending on where I want to sit and stitch. But that, and it holds my equipment and stuff like that. But it's a nice kind of airy place to work.
Sounds pleasant.
It is pleasant. Yes.
Good for you. Yep. So
I think that's actually one of the most important things is choosing a place that you enjoy being, because you're going to be there a lot.
Mm-hmm. And just a place that you can even leave it out. I think that's, you know, especially as a hobbyist, you know, to just be able to come and sit down and not have to put all your stuff away, I think is really important. I think it can be so much effort for people to pull out all their, you know, equipment and their frames and stuff, that it's a little bit, you know, at the end of a day, if you're tired, it's a little bit off-putting. But if it's all laying out there ready for you in, like you said, a pleasant place, then, yeah, you're going to want to do it.
So what's a day like? Do you get up regularly and get started working, or do you just let it happen when it happens? How do you
no,
go about
I'm
your day?
No, I'm definitely a planner. Yes, okay. I like to know everything that's going to happen. So I do try to break it up. Depending on what's most pressing, I tend to let that kind of take over. But my ideal day would be to get up and work on admin and anything I had to write, you know, first. I think I'm writing, I struggle with a little bit, especially like blog post, creative writing type of a thing. So I like to do that right off the bat when I'm fresh, and it comes a lot easier then. And anything creative, definitely in the morning, I get that done first. And then I would just break up the day by, you know, working on embroidery patterns or working on canvases. You know, typically I'll maybe stitch a little bit. I don't actually do like as much stitching as probably I should or would like to. But most of my day is taken up probably by painting and by a lot of computer work. There's a lot of computer work that goes into a creative job. I think people don't necessarily realize mm-hmm. that. But yeah, and then I'll just kind of go until I, to hopefully till I drop.
So your canvases, your needlepoint canvases, how do you distribute those?
So they are through Fleur de Paris, who produce beautiful hand-painted canvases. So I just send them right off to them, and they produce them and then distribute them throughout the U.S. for me.
Oh, okay. That simplifies mm-hmm. things.
It does, yes. You know, I know a lot of people paint their own, which I admire, because I get bored pretty quickly if I have to paint a design more than a few times. So I do feel lucky to just get to paint it once and move on.
All right, Rooftops of Paris. I have to hear about that design and how you worked in Rainbow Gallery. And the sky alone is mm-hmm. is really eye-catching. Talk about that design and stitching that. That's a standout for me.
Thank you. Yeah, that that design actually came about before I started painting canvases. It was a project I did in you know during my illustration classes, and as soon as I did it, I thought, oh, that could be a canvas work piece or a needlepoint piece, and it sat on my wall for maybe a couple more years, and and as soon as I was ready to start a new piece, I said that was the one that was it was going to be. And so I think I started stitching that piece before I even started painting canvases, and ended up sort of stitching and painting as I went with with my canvas, the one you see in that picture. I would stitch one area, then I'd go back and paint another, you know, the next one, stitch that, go back and paint another, which I don't recommend doing.
But, yeah, that sounds kind of
it
difficult.
It was a little crazy.
Yeah, crazy was actually the word I was going to use, and I restrained myself a little bit
yes.
there.
It was crazy. But I really learned on that piece. You know, just learned different stitches, learned to use new threads. You know, my canvas work piece at the RSN was using stranded cotton and wool. And I love wool and I love cotton too, but, you know, I almost thought it was like sacrilegious to put like sparkles in your needlework. Like I was like, that's not historic. That's not traditional. And so this was just a really wonderful piece to kind of break out of that. And you use these sort of synthetic materials, and I think I used some these really, really sparkly metallic for the Eiffel Tower, and I loved it. I was a little, when Val mentioned, oh, you should put some sparkle in your piece, and I was like a little bit skeptical. I was like, okay, I'll do it. And as soon as I picked it up, I was like, oh, this is wonderful. And since then, I've been using Sparkle for sure. So I use quite a bit of Rainbow Gallery in that piece, and so wrote a blog post for them. And yeah, Danny Raven from Rainbow Gallery just reached out to me and asked me to write a post for them. And then since then, we've done, I just designed for them to write a stitch guide for. So we have a collaboration going on that you'll see pretty soon. But yeah, I enjoy their threads.
Yeah. So that sky, the sky, is anything special to make that gradation in the sky the way it works?
Yeah. Well, so a lot of it, you know, the painting is showing through. And that's another thing I had to get used to. You know, in England, we covered the entire canvas with stitches. And, you know, here I used what was called the popcorn stitch. It's very time consuming. It drove me a little crazy, but it's really beautiful. And I love how it turned out. But, you know, it was just gradating the thread. I think I maybe used 5 or 6 different threads, different colors, you know, starting from that coral peak going down to the white and the yellow. But, you know, if you look closely, you know, a lot of the canvas is actually showing, the thread is just covering the groove kind of between the horizontal threads. So, yeah, that's how I achieved that.
Okay. I see it now. Yes. All right.
Yeah. But if you, I mean, you can absolutely achieve that kind of gradation purely with threads. It just takes kind of careful blending, you know, lots of colors and using multiple strands in your needle and then, you know, just switching those strands out and sort of gently moving down with the color.
And that's
it's possible.
That's interesting that it seems like what you learned at the Royal School of Needlework, I mean, there's a style and an expectation there, and that you almost mm-hmm. have to break out of the mold of that mm-hmm. to do some of your designs. Is that is a little resistance there or a little?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think back and I realize other students were using like sparkles and stuff at the Royal School of Needlework, but there was definitely, you know, we didn't use a painted canvas to learn canvas work. We just drew the design right onto the canvas and you covered the canvas entirely. And, you know, none of the canvas showed through. And I feel like there was maybe the philosophy was a little bit different. It's kind of, on one hand, it's a little bit, I feel like more artistic in that, like you take stitches and you blend them together and you learn how to do that because they're geometric. So it's a little bit tricky. And I loved that about it, but yeah, I think stylistically there is a difference maybe between canvas work as the RSN taught it and needlepoint in the U.S. for sure.
Because see, that's one of the things I struggle with painted canvases, and because I was brought up that what I learned was you cover everything. That's how I learned it.
Right, right.
And so when I look at painted canvases, and I see people use open stitches and mm-hmm. let the paint show through, I don't know how to deal with that just because I want to cover it somehow.
Sure.
You know, but then it's painted beautifully. I mean, good canvas, good painted canvases, that's a piece of art there that you're enhancing with the thread. And so, but for me, it's kind of a tussle in my head. Do I let that show through and is that okay? Or should I find some way mm-hmm. to cover it up? And then I think, well, I'm covering it up with a color that essentially matches the paint. What's the difference, you know?
Yeah. Right. You're not really, you have to, I think, change the way you think about it and think about not
just
covering
to.
It up. But create, I know. You always want to keep things the same. But you're really not covering it. You're bringing it to life. You're giving it texture, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I would think about it a little bit differently.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think both are good, you know. Mm-hmm. It just depends on, I think, also the look you like. Like, I do love the sort of the thickness of covering it completely. Like, that, it just has more, well, it has more fiber on top of the mm-hmm. canvas. But it also, you know, then you kind of lose a certain airiness, if that make sense as well.
Yes.
So it's just the look that you're going for. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I struggle with that all the time. Well, see, in a charted thing, I just finished up a Debbie Rowley here not too long ago, her Diamond Light 3, I think it was 3, and the corners are very much an open stitch, and it worked up really well, an open stitch, and there were beads in there, and it was just a real struggle for me to leave that, and it was a kind of a tea-stained type canvas. So there was a texture behind it and a gradation of color, a tannish color. And then I was forever fighting with the carryover threads so that they didn't become a visual distraction.
Yes.
Right.
Because the stitches were such that I couldn't begin and end one with each combination of stitches. It wouldn't work. I had to carry over. And so I went through this mental struggle as I'm stitching it, to make sure that the carryover stitches are not showing any more than they have to, and to do them all the same so that there's at least, if they are seen or your eye does catch them, that there's a consistency to them. But then it was that open canvas that just kept bothering me. But I have to say, when I got done, I fought my way through it, and I got done, I was really pleased with the result. But
that's good.
Yeah, it's just a struggle I have with that. And yeah, I hate
it. Seems like it's if you've learned one particular style, learning a different style is difficult, because the things that you're taught to, that are, you know, the wrong way in one style become the right way in the next one. So you have to fight that urge to, you know, to do things the right way and embrace the fact that there is, you know, there is no wrong way.
Yeah,
I think it's kind of what you actually
I laugh because I know, right, Gary has very strong ideas about the right way and the wrong way. And I think that's one of the ways that we complement each other well, is that maybe I'm just too much of a neophyte with things to not know that there's a wrong way. So I'm perfectly happy to do things that don't make that aren't the, you know, the correct way that I've been taught, and just kind of roll with it. That said, I will have to say, with seamstress type things, I'm definitely very much the right way to do things, because I was taught, you know, probably a lot more rigorously with that, so I can appreciate that.
Yeah, I think it also, you know, if you know sort of the historic way it was done, then you can also intentionally break that, you know, if you know kind of what people do, what is considered the right way. You know, you need to learn the right way so that you can conscientiously break that.
Break
and
it.
Make
exactly.
your own style choices. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Right. I think that you break the rules in a more thoughtful, useful way. If you've, you know, worked the rules for long enough that you know why they exist.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Gary's not breaking any rules.
No. Well, see, the other struggle I have is you know, the early needle point that I learned was all just basket weave, or it was you know, the only variety was the colors in the design. And then you had the drudgery of sitting there and just basket weaving a background in this, you know, whatever neutral color it was. And so I just grew to hate, you know, I didn't needlepoint for a long time, because I just, if that's what it's all about, then I'll pass. You know, it just gets old after a while. And then, you know, these days with all the threads and all the different stitches and the variety that these designers put together, it's every segment is a new challenge. And new fun, and you change threads, and the thread behaves different, and it's so much, to me, so much better. And so many people, when they do needlepoint, basket weave is, as someone described, a place to rest your eyes, and
it's
not the dominant thing, except on really small detailed stuff, where you really have no other choice. But you know, that, to me, that's just the welcome change from when I first started doing it, which would just, it really did. It just got incredibly boring to me. Like, stop this. I can't take anymore.
That's It's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I want to add some stump work to the canvas I'm working on right now.
Oh,
never done stump work, but
yes.
I think it'd be fabulous. Yeah. I mean, you can just take any technique, applique, you know, yeah, you can put anything on a canvas. Wool felts is very fun. Needle felting. I have not tried it myself, but I've done needle felting in the past, and that's just where you take wool roving before it's been, you know, spun mm-hmm. into yarn, and yeah, just you felt it with this needle and it sticks to the canvas, and you can do you know, animals like a bunny or a dog or something just purely in that, and it was a really cool texture.
Yeah, stump work is very high on my list to try next, because every time I see really good stump work, oh, I got to try that.
It's stunning.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Yeah, the Inspirations magazine, I get that. And
yeah,
you know, forever shoving stump work stuff. I want to do that.
I mean,
it looks like fun, but it also looks intimidating. I can't believe it's as difficult as it looks. But
what do you find intimidating about it?
Well, you're stitching in a lot of ways. You're creating a wire form, from what I understand, and stitching around that or stitching on that, and so that looks like challenging but also intimidating. And of course, everything I see, every stump work thing I see, is the epitome of the skill. So
yes.
Yeah, you wonder, if I venture into one of these things, is it going to look like some, you know, some kindergartner took an attempt at it, or is it going to actually look like something? And then it comes into that difference between you and me, Christine, where I was just going to say,
you have to give yourself permission to not be perfect, because if you don't do that, then you'll never try it, because you'll be afraid of the imperfection. And the first time you do it, it's of course not going to be perfect, and that's completely acceptable.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to try it no matter what. I got to try this. And Abby, have you done any stump work, or is that?
I have not. That has also been on my list for a really long time. So I'm excited to try it on this canvas. I'm going to do it kind of a 3D daisy, hopefully.
Okay.
We'll see.
Yeah. Because a lot of your flowers would really lend themselves well to stump work.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I hope ribbon work as well, kind of some of those more interesting techniques, for sure.
Oh, yeah, and that's, you know, that's another one that looks like fun. Some of the people that do, you know, baskets of flowers and make the flowers out of ribbons, holy smokes, is that neat stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. It's really beautiful.
Learning how to fold that ribbon so it looks like a flower, that's a talent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great stuff. So, Abby, what's next for you other than stump work? You just creating more designs, or you got some bigger plans?
Just as many canvas designs as possible, definitely. I'll keep designing. I definitely want to take, I think, my blog to the next level. I really want it to be a resource for people, for stitchers, and for people my age to find out what needlepoint is. I'm working on a blog post right now. You know, I talked to some of my friends and said, you know, they're crafters, and, you know, what intimidates you about needlepoint? What are you curious about? And I was surprised to find that they didn't actually know. They were like, oh, I don't really know what needlepoint is.
So
I'm just kind of trying to write a comprehensive post on kind of the very basics. And, I'm just want to have people come to my blog and, you know, find, you know, answers to their questions and walk away, you know, better stitchers, for sure. And then, you know, some kind of more beginner embroidery kits are definitely on my radar, as well as crewel work. Crewel work is gorgeous. And, you know, there's really kind of a need for, I think, crewel work. There's not a lot out there in terms of kits and patterns on the market. And, you know, it's very forgiving. It's kind of chunkier than, you know, kind of typical embroidery, and it goes a little faster. And I think that would just really appeal to a lot of people. And I love it. So I definitely want to do a few crewel work kits.
That's interesting that technique has kind of faded. And I've done a couple of them and enjoyed them, but I don't understand why that has not held its own with the other techniques.
Yeah. Especially when it actually kind of, I think, would have really appealed to people who have a little bit less time, you know, to kind of sit
right,
down and really
faster.
Struggle or something. Yeah, for sure.
Why More do you forgiving. Think it is so amongst, you know, younger people, things like knitting and crochet have completely taken off and it's, you know, the cool thing to do. Why do you think that has worked and this mm-hmm. has not? What's the difference? What do you think it is?
You know, I do think embroidery is. I think that yeah. is seeing, yes, a huge kind of surge. You know, I look at magazines that 5 years ago would not have any embroidery and half the projects are embroidery. You know, you look at like Molly Makes or even look at like Etsy and there are tons of embroidery kits available where I think, you know, not that long ago, there just weren't. I think that hand embroidery, kind of using the sort of typical stitches, you know, DMC floss, stuff like that, is very much gaining popularity. There are a lot of new books coming out as well. But in terms of, you know, needlepoint, I think it can be a little bit intimidating for, you know, millennials, because you walk into a needlepoint store and you have a canvas and you have the threads and you have the frame, but there's really no instruction booklet that goes along with needlepoint. And so I think it's really something that people need to be educated on what it is. Yeah, so they're not intimidated by it.
You think it's just a lack of instruction or a lack of how-to type things?
Yeah, and I think a lack of exposure as well. I think that a lot of people who needlepoint learned first from, like, their mom or their grandma or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's...
So
that's
people I don't think are... Yeah, they're not walking into a needlepoint store and picking up the craft, for sure.
Yes, but
I think they could.
Yeah, well, they definitely could. Yeah, and that's the thing. But I think for a lot of people, they need somebody to expose them to it. And
right, to show them. Well, even with Gary and I mean, I had done, you know, a little bit of needlework when I was, you know, a child. But without him saying, hey, you need to look here and really pointing out what was going on, it's so modernized, you know, over the last years. It doesn't look anything like what it did when I was a kid. You know, when I was a kid, it was, you know, these sort of kitschy eagles and tigers and, you know, the cruel work kind of things that you were talking about before. And I had no idea until Gary had pointed out some of these new needlepoint canvases, what sort of how it had evolved, you know, so completely into something very, very different.
Yeah. I think it is an exposure thing.
Yep. Abby, this has been fun.
Thank you.
Yeah, this has been a real treat.
It's been a pleasure.
Yep, and exciting stuff you're doing. Your designs are fun to look at. That's
I'm looking forward to the blog posts too. That are you know, sort of the welcome to our world blog post.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah, so get writing, Abby. Come on.
Yeah, will do.
All right. That's going to be it for Fiber Talk this week. Thanks again to Abby Timmis for helping us out. And as always, the page for this podcast lists every way we can find to get a hold of Abby and to see her work. So check that out. And our website, wetalkfiber.com, and of course, available podcasts available wherever, whatever app you use pretty much anymore.
Right. And we're on Instagram and Facebook as usual.
Yep. Yeah, like us on Facebook. We're closing in on 1,000, so that would be great. So that's going to be it for this episode of Fiber Talk. Thanks for listening, and thanks again, Abby.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.